Okay, we're beginning on the top of Yechet Amud Aleph, five lines down by the word Gufa. Gemara yesterday left off, depending on the Shita of Rashi or the Balei HaTosafot, with a conclusion about the Drasha of Rabbi Shimon from the Braita. As far as Rashi is concerned, the Drasha from the Braita brings you a baseline of Malkot by each one of the items that are enumerated in the Pasuk, in Dvarim, Yud Bet, Pasuk Yud Zayin, and you'll get Malkot for a Chutz L'choma by each one of those items. In addition to that, you have Isurim that are associated with each of these items, dependent on what the Limud or Kal V'chomer was in each of those instances, with the exception of Bikurim, where there was Malkot that was associated with the eating of the Bikurim before the Kriya. That was the view of Rashi, and Rashi's conclusion is that the Gemara believes both for Rabbi Shimon and the Braita, as well as Rova and his statement, when they say Lokeh, we're not taking it literally, but rather figuratively, and that means just Isurim, and not Malkot. And Rashi in the end says, well then how do we get Malkot by the case of Kodshei Kodashim that leave the Klaim? He says that that is from Basar Basadeh Trefa Lotochelu. That is the view of Rashi. The Balei HaTosafot actually take up that position of Rashi, but adjust it slightly. And that is the Balei HaTosafot bring that the Malkot that are associated with this have to do with the Isurim that are built up, the Chidush, in each of the items enumerated in the Pasuk in Devarim Yud Bet. Whereas the other items that are the baseline of what makes them similar, those Isurim are just that, Isurim and not Malkot. But then fundamentally they agree with Rashi that the Gemara's conclusion over here is that everything is just Isurim. When it says Lokeh in the Braita of Rabbi Shimon, when it says Lokeh by Rava, that means Isurim. On the other hand, there was the view of the Ri that the Balei HaTosafot brought, that is subscribed to by a number of other Rishonim, which is that the Gemara's conclusion over here is Lokeh means really you get Malkot. And the Chiddush is that the extraneous Pasuk in Dvarim Yud Bet teaches you that all the Limudim that you get through these Kal V'chomers, which otherwise would be Ein Mazirin Min Adin, over here you give them Malkot. And therefore the Gemara's conclusion is that we can take the word Lokeh or Malkot literally, and that means when Rava says you get five sets of Malkot, he literally means five sets of Malkot and not Isurim. That was the conclusion that we got to yesterday. Now the Gemara is asking about that statement of Rava, Gufa, Amar Rava, Zar She'achal Min Ola, Lifnei Zrika. This is a requote of what Rava said in the end of yesterday's daf, that if a Zar, that means a non-Kohen, who eats from an Ola, Lifnei Zrika, before Zrika Tadam, Chutz Lechoma, outside the walls of Yerushalayim, the Rabbi Shimon of the Braita that we saw yesterday, Loke Chamesh, you'll get five sets of Malkot, and Rashi enumerated those for us yesterday, we'll just review them quickly. You get one for Chutz Lechoma, for eating outside the walls of Yerushalayim, because Ma'aser says that you're Chayav there, and Kal V'chomer here when we're speaking about an Ola, which Kodshei Kodashim. Chal Mishum Lifnei Zrika, one that we get for eating a Korban before Zrikat Adam, which is a Kal V'chomer from Todah and Shlamim, where we learn that din from. And obviously an Ola, which is more Chamor than a Todah and Shlamim, also that restriction would be in place. Chal Mishum Zar Gamur Le'achar Zrika. The other one is for someone who is a non-Kohen, even after Zrikat Adam, who may not partake of the Korban, which is a Kal V'chomer from Bechor, which is one of the Matnot Kihuna, where a Zar has no right to eat from it. And of course, Lifnei Zrika, then it would be applicable. If after Zrika there's an Isur, certainly before Zrika there's going to be an Isur. And then number four is Ochel Chutz Lekaim, eating outside the walls of the Azara. That comes from a Kal V'chomer from Chatat Vasham. A Chatat Vasham, you're not allowed to eat outside the walls of the Azara, certainly by an Ola. Well, you're not allowed to eat it at all. You can't eat it outside the walls of the Azara. And b'chad mishum ochel ola afilu kohen b'toch ha-kohen. There's a restriction against a kohen eating an ola even inside the Azara. And then Rashi says, kosher kein lazar. Then certainly a zar should be restricted in consuming such an item. Those are the five sets of makot that you would get based on the pasuk in Dvarim Yud Bet, pasuk Yud Zayin. Avlo tuchal lechol bisharecha, masar degancha, vetiroshcha, vitzarecha, ubechorot bekarcha, vitzonecha, vechol nedarecha, asher tidor, nidvotecha, vetrumat yadecha. And you're supposed to not do that, but rather eat it before Hashem in the Mikdash. And there, Rabbi Shimon Darshan, from each of the unique items there, a chiddush that tells you an additional set of Malkot for the hierarchy of the items that are mentioned there. And Rova, based on that, says you should get five sets of Malkot in this situation, which we just enumerated based on Rashi. Then the Gemara's question is, V'lo keinami mishom v'zar lo yochal kikodeshem. So why is it that we're limited to five sets of makot? You actually could give another set of makot based on the pasuk that's found in Parshat Tetzaveh, is part of the miluim. It says, V'achlu otam asher kupar bahem. Those that are getting the kapara should eat it. Malei yadam olukadesh otam, in order to put them into service and to sanctify them. Bizar lo yochal kikodeshem. Izar may not partake of those items kikodeshem because they are kodesh. And from this, you see, as Rashi notes over here, kikodeshem teaches you that these items, because they are kodesh, because they are kodshei kodeshim, therefore Izar is precluded from consuming them or partaking in them. And so why can't you add that to the list of levin that an individual would be in violation of? My says, Hanimile Heched Lekoanim Chazi. That's only true when it's available for the Kohanim to eat, then there is a restriction against the Zar consuming it. Halcha de Lekoanim Nami Lo Chazi. Over here where a Kohen can't eat it either because it's an Olah, then you're not going to put the restriction on the Zar. The reason is the Pasuk formulates it in that way. It says, Vachlu Otam Asher Kupar Bahem. So those that are getting the kapara should eat it. So the contrast between the beginning of the pasuk, which is v'achlu otam asher kupar behem, which means the kohanim who can eat it, versus the end of the pasuk, which is v'zar lo yochal kikodeshem, tells you when is this principle or when is this negative commandment of v'zar lo yochal kikodeshem in force? That's when it is v'achlu otam asher kupar behem, when the Kohanim are able to partake or participate in the Korban. So here, that wouldn't be relevant because we're speaking about an Olah where Kohanim don't get anything from it, goes Kalil on the Mizbeach. So that's the first question that the Gemara asks. You should just know both the Rashi and Tosafot deal with the fact that there was an alternate Girsa over here, which Rashi is Sholel, because he says that that Pasuk is a Pasuk that deals with Truma and not with Kodoshim. So there was a girsa that said, instead of what we have in the Gemara, which is, Bizar lo yuchal kikodesh heim, there is a girsa that had Zar lo yuchal kodesh. And that pasuk is from Parshat Emor, and that is in the Parshia of Truma, which we saw the other day, of Ish Ish Mizera Aron. And as the Balei Tosafot note, and Rashi notes, that Ish Ish Mizera Aron is only relevant to items that are Sheveh, the Kol Zerva Aron. And the Gemara concluded from that, that's speaking about Truma. That Parshia in Parshat Emor is dealing with Truma, and therefore the question can't come from there. But rather, as Rashi and the Balei Tosafot note, the Girsa in our Gemara, which is the pasuk from Parshat Tetzaveh with regards to the Miluim, which precludes a Zar from participating, eating anything that is Kodshei Kodeshim, that are Kodeshim, that is the pasuk that the Gemara is quoting. Now the Gemara asks another question. Why don't you get Malkot for that pasuk? The pasuk has a more generic sense. And that is because, the Gemara notes, the word basadeh is extraneous over here. If you just wanted to say you can't eat a trefa, it should just say, ubasar trefa lo tochelu. Why does it, besides that, say, ubasar basadeh trefa lo tochelu? So that the pasuk says, anshe kodesh tuyunli, ubasar basadeh trefa lo tochelu lakelev tashlichun oto. So that basadeh, as Rashi notes over here, comes to teach you that anything that is basadeh, basadeh implies an area where there are no mechitzot, an area that's not bounded in any way, an area that's completely open. And so what it says here is basar basadeh, any basar that's in the field, meaning that it's without boundaries or outside its boundaries, then that lo tochelu, you may not eat. From that, the Gemara here wants to indicate that maybe we should get Malkot over here too. This individual is eating this Olah outside of the bounds in which the Olah is allowed to be found, which is inside the Azara. So why don't you get Malkot for Ubasar Basadeh Trefa lo tochelu? Gemara says, Kevin, Shiatza Basar Chutz Lemechitzato Ne'esar. As soon as the Basar leaves its Mechitza, it becomes a sur. And that is the lav that is being stated here by the pasuk, ubasar basadeh trefa lo tochelu. Where it says, hani milei heched debifnim chazi. Once again here, the Gemara says that ubasar basadeh trefa lo tochelu is only if there is a location where this item could be eaten. Hacha debifnim nami lo chazi. Over here, even if it was inside the azara, you still couldn't eat it. So therefore, when you take it out of the azara, it's not going to be affected by this lav. This lav tells you that when you're inside, you're not in the sadeh, it's fine. But when you're out in the sadeh, lo tochelu. But it implies that there is a location where you can eat it. And because of that, you would be chayav if you ate it outside of that location. ubasar basadeh. But if everything is outside the location, because there is no location where you can eat it, then this pasuk is not relevant. A similar genre of answer that was given by the Gemara to the previous question. The only issue that's raised here, it's a serious issue, I mentioned it yesterday, basar basadeh trefalo tochelo, seems like a lav shebichlalot. That seems like a lav that has multiple manifestations, and generally lav shebichlalot you don't get malkot for. So over here, the Balei HaTosafot ask, why was the Gemara even thinking that you should get malkot over here? Because this is a lav shebichlalot, and a lav shebichlalot you would not get malkot for. And that is because this restriction is also, for instance, a situation where you have a fetus inside of an animal. If you shechted the animal with the fetus inside, the shechita of the mother would be matir the baby as well. But if the in utero fetus sticks any part of their body out, for instance, it was in the middle of birthing when the mother was shechted, and then there's a leg or an arm of the animal sticking out, then that is basar basadeh trefalo tochelu. It went out of its mechitza. The mechitza is inside the mother. As long as it's inside the mother, the shechita of the mother helps you out. On the other hand, when you stick something outside of the mechitza, which means outside of the mother, there it becomes problematic, and the shechita of the mother doesn't help it, and then it runs into major problems because of the fact that the animal is partially in, partially out, that we'll get to in the Gemara in Chulin. But given that, the Balei HaTosafot say over here, why isn't this considered to be a lav shebichlalot, including things like Kodashim leaving their mechitza, shechita Chulin leaving its mechitza, that's a lav that incorporates many different items that are not of all the same type, and that is your classic example of lav shebichlalot. The Balei HaTosafot answer over here that that's not true. Over here, this is not a lav shebichlalot. They start to give a broader definition of what is not considered to be a lav shebichlalot. And they say over here, Yesh lomar, t'lo chashvin en lav shebichlalot, ekele kimon ki im tzliyesh, by the Korban HaPesach, that you have to roast it, shekolel na umivushal. Over there it says you should eat it roasted, not cooked, and not raw. So over there it includes items that have nothing to do with each other. Raw and cooked are the opposite sides. V'chein kosher b'kodesh pasul d'yotzei v'tamei u'psulim acharim she'en shnei shemot. A pasuk we're going to get to in a couple of minutes, he also says that is definitely considered to be a lav shechalot. Aval hocha, over here, shekolel kol yotzei levad v'shem yotzei chadahi, rak tahavik b'kamed rachim lochashiv le'lav shechalot. Over here, the restriction is against yotzei. They're all of the same genre of problem or isur. Since the isur relates to yitziah, then they're considered to be one item. And it's not a lav shebichlalot. It's not including multiple different items or manifestations. It's one manifestation. That's yotzei. How you define yotzei, that depends on the context. So Tosfot over here needs this, actually, not to be a lav shebichlalot, because he, in the previous Gemara, agreed with Rashi that the reason you get Malkot in our Mishnah for taking Kodshei Kodashim Chutz L'Klayim is from this Pasuk, Basar Basadeh Trefa Lo Tochelu. So he has to believe that that Pasuk gives you Malkot, and that's what Tosfot's doing over here. He's defending that position that you do get Malkot for this lav, even though it looks like a lav shebichlalot. In essence, it is not a lav shebichlalot, because of the fact that it's all one type, and that's yotzei. But if you get other lavin, like by the Korban HaPesach, which says you must eat it roasted, nothing else, that nothing else is raw, cooked, that's all over the place. They have nothing to do with each other. As well as a pasuk we're going to see in a second that restricts anything that is pasul b'kodesh. Over there it includes pigul, notar, tamei. It includes all different types of isurim. Over there, that's called a lav shebichlalot. The Ritva over here gives a different answer, which is interesting. He says that Ein Ochanami, this is a lav shebichlalot, but the Gemara's question over here is al pi Rova, because Rova is the one who says you get five sets of malkot. And there's actually a machloket, the Bayin Rova, as to whether you get malkot for a lav shebichlalot. And Rova's position is that you do get malkot for a lav shebichlalot. So he claims that the question of the Gemara over here is premised on Rova the Shittato, who believes that you do get malkot for a lav shebichlalot. So it's an interesting approach of the Ritva, but does relate to the fact that that Gemara is a major machloket rishonim, because the Gemara, which has that machloket between Abai and Rava, appears a number of times in Shas, and it's what Balei HaTosafot call me a sugyot amitchalfot, which is a sugya where one place in Shas, it has Abai's position and Rava's position as such, and other places in Shas, their positions are flipped. And so it's not clear whether Abaye or Rava has that position. And obviously it has a big nafkamino lalocha, because we paskin like Rava. When you have a machloket Abai and Rava, we paskin like Rava. The question is, which position does Rava have? And you can see that in the Rambam, in his introduction to the Sefer HaMitzvot, you can see that he paskins differently than other Rishonim, seemingly because he has a different girsa than the other Rishonim. And he's following the girsa in the Gemara in one place, versus the Rishonim, they're following it in another place. So the Ritva's answer works if Rava is really that position or that author of that position. So he gives that answer that here it's the Shita Toh of Rava, the Gemara's asking, that's why it doesn't bother with Lav Shebechalot. But we know that the Bayit Tosafot and Rashi both needed not to be a Lav Shebechalot, because according to them, they both believed that that was the reason for Malkot in our Mishnah, for Kodesh Kodeshim that left the Kalaim. And so therefore they have to make it that it's not a Lav Shebechalot, according to everyone. Whereas the Ri and the Ramban and the Ritva, who think that when the Gemara concluded over here yesterday that Rava was saying Loker, he literally means Loker, and not just Isurim, then in that case, you could get the Makot from Lo Tuchal Lechol Bisharecha, the Pasuk in Dvarim Yud Bet. There is a secondary problem, which is the fact that this is what we call an Isur Chalal Isur. You already have Isurim on this item, and then this is Isur Chalal Isur, and we have a principle, Ein Isur Chalal Isur. And so over here, how do you get an additional Isur part on top of this? Or how do you get Malkot for this if you can't have Isur Chalal Isur? You could answer, according to Rashi and the Balei HaTosafot, who concluded the previous Gemara, that when Rava says Lokeh, it's not literally Lokeh, but Isurim, then you could just say this is just another Isur. It's not saying you get Malkot for it, it's just another Isur. For those that suggest that we take Rava literally, that it is Malkot, then you would have to answer why this isn't an Isur Chalal Isur, or why this isn't under the rubric of an Isur Chalal Isur. There are ways where there are exceptions to that rule, whether it's Isur Mosif, Isur Kolel, or other things that might make it that you could get it to not be a problem of an Isur Chalal Isur. So then the Gemara asks, Viloke Nabi Ki Rabbi Eliezer, why don't you get Malkot for this violation also because of Rabbi Eliezer? Dama Rabbi Eliezer, now here there's some controversy with regards to the girsa. You see that some put in the girsa of Haim, but it seems from Rashi on the next Amud, and based on the girsa in the Masechtot Acherot, where this is brought, that it's referencing to in the Miluim, in Parshat Tetzaveh, Perek Chavtet Pasuk Lamed Dalet, Ve'im Yivater Mibsar HaMiluim Umin Alechem Ad HaBoker, Saraftet Anotar Ve'ish, Lo Ye'achel Ki Kodesh Hu. And the focus of the drasha is on the Ki Kodesh Hu, which teaches you, Kol Shebekodesh Pasul, anything that has a psul because it's Kodesh, Ba'katuv Litein Lotase Al Achilato. The Torah comes to tell you that you may not eat that item, and there's a lotase, meaning that there is a restriction against eating such an item. So here, this seems like a Lav Shebekololot, and that is what the Balei HaTosafot ask. You can see on the top, Balei HaTosafot here, they just already said it in the previous Amud, that don't worry, there is in Lav Shekhvalot. And that's the coming up. This is the one that it is. And the top Balei HaTosafot asked that question. He says, Mishum Hachilo Laki, Davi Lav Shebechlalot. Why do you need any other reason? The reason you don't get Malkot over here is because this is a Lav Shebechlalot that includes multiple items. It includes Notar, Tamei, Pigul, all these items that are Psulot, Bakodesh, they're all subsumed under this Lav or this restriction. And so if that's the case, it's a Lav Shebechlalot. What's the Gemara asking? Veluke, get Malkot for it. So Tosafot says, we could answer like the Shita of Rashi, which the Balei Tosafot themselves also took up on the previous Amud, that we're just looking for additional Isurim over here. And this is an Isur. It's not about Malkot. But he notes, about the Perish Ari, according to the Ri, who said that you do get Malkot literally, Kasha, he says Loke means literally you get Malkot. How is the Gemara asking over here that you should get Malkot? And Tosafot, the answer is, Eino Hanami. The Gemara could have asked that question. It just had a better way to deal with the issue. It brings one way, which we're going to see in a second in the Gemara, to deal with it. But Eino Hanami, if it didn't have that reason, Lav Shebechlalot would have been the answer to this, that you don't get Malkot for it. Now the Gemara says, Hani Milehecha Dekodim Psulo Chazi. The only time that you have this restriction is where at one point it was good, and then Bekodesh, it became Pasul. So the idea being that you have something that was properly Kodesh and could have been eaten, used, whatever it was needed for in the Kodesh, and then it becomes Pasul Bekedusha. Because of its fact that it's Kodesh, it became Pasul. But it had to be Ra'oi at some point. Hacha Kodem Psulo Nami Lo Chazi. Over here, before it was Pasul, there wasn't anything that was Ra'oi. So then there's no Lav that would derive from that. This Lav only applies to things that were fine and then became Psulo Bekodesh. So for instance, Notar, it was left past the time. Tamei, it became Tamei because it was Tahor at one point and then it became Tamei. Those are things that are Psulo Bekodesh. the psoas because they are kodesh, but it was ro'oi. During the time period that you were allowed to eat it, it was fine. Now it's notar. It went past the time period. Tamei, it was tahor. You could have eaten it. You could have partaken of it. But now it became tamei, so you cannot. And the only reason it's problematic is of tumah, which is only relevant by kodesh. So those are things that are psula ba kodesh, but those are things that were okay, and then afterwards we're not okay. Over here, we're starting out with the olah, which was never okay. It was not anything you could have eaten. It wasn't anything that could have been partaken of, and therefore it's not considered to be psulo but kodesh, and that's why you wouldn't get makot for this lav in this instance. Rabbi says, "Veluke nami ki idach to Rabbi Eliezer." You should get makot for the other case of Rabbi Eliezer. The Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, kol shehu bikalil tiyeh itein lo taseh achilato. Anything that has a requirement of Kalil Tiyah. Kalil Tiyah means that it must be placed on the Mizbeach entirely. The Pasuk that he's quoting is actually not a Pasuk by Olah. It's actually a Pasuk about the Minchat Kohen, that it has to be Kalil Tiyah, that it has to be fully placed on the Mizbeach. But nevertheless, the context of what he's saying it is about a Mincha, but it's true of anything that is Kalil. Because the Pasuk over there by the Mincha says, Kalil Tiyah Lo Tochal. It must be fully put on the Mizbeach, you may not eat it. And since there's a Lav associated with that Asay, then anything that has to go fully on the Mizbeach is subject to that Lo Taseh. What is being said here by Rabbi Lazar is, if you have to put it fully on the Mizbeach, that means that there's a derivative Lo Taseh from that, that you may not eat it. You must put it on the Mizbeach, therefore, you may not eat it. And so he says there's a lotaseh that derives from that. The Gemara says, Ein hochanami. You're right. You should have gotten malkot for that. Perova mehai kra ke'amar. But Rava's answer is that I'm telling you from this one pasuk. He says his statement, you will get five malkot based on Rabbi Shimon and the Braita from the pasuk in Dvarim Yud Bet. Pasuk Yud Zayin of lotuchal le'achol bisharecha. He wanted to count or enumerate the number of malkiot that you would get for that pasuk. But he doesn't include the possibility of malkiot that would come from other psukim, including this one, which is that if you have a requirement to put it fully in the mizbeach, that means that there is a restriction against eating it. And so over here, you would have that lo taseh, you would get malkot for it, but he didn't enumerate it because of the fact that it came from a different pasuk. Now, Amar Rav Gidol Marav, Kohen she'achal mechatat v'asham lifnei zrika, loka. Kohen who eats from a chatat v'asham before zrikat adam, he gets malkot. Now, after zrikat adam, the Kohen is permitted to eat from the chatat v'asham, the stuff that doesn't go on the mizbeach, is then fine for the Kohenim to eat. But he jumped the gun and he's eating it before Zrikat Adam. Over here, Rav says that you'll get makot for eating in that case. My daima. What is the reason for that? Damakra, bachlu otam asher kupar bahem. It says that those that will eat it, asher kupar bahem, that have kapara from it. Lachar kapara in, lifnei kapara lo. Only after kapara are you allowed to eat it. Before kapara, you are not allowed to eat it. Lav, abba michlala say, lavu. And a negative commandment that derives from a positive statement has a classification as a lav, has a classification as a negative precept. So what Rav is saying over here is that you have a positive commandment, and this is the pasuk we read before, from Pashat Titzaveh, Vachlu otam asher kupar behem, Malayat yadam nakadesh otam zar liyuchal ki kodeshem. He says, the first part of the pasuk says, Vachlu otam asher kupar behem. You may eat it if you attain kapara. The attaining of kapara comes from the zrikat adam, the placing of the dam on the Mizbeach. And so what Rav suggests over here is, the Pasuk implies that only if there is Kapara may you eat it. That means that if you don't have Kapara, the Dam doesn't reach the Mizbeach, you may not eat it. And even though it's an inference from a positive statement, nevertheless, that positive statement creates a derivative, which is a lotaseh, a negative statement, that you may not eat it if you don't do this, or if you do not accomplish what is the mandate in the pasuk. And he says, lav abba michlala say, lavu. A lav that is a derivative of a positive commandment, that is considered to be a lav. Meitiv Rava. Rava asks a question. Now, over here, there's a little bit of an issue because he quotes something without noting that it is a braita. That's number one. So, there are girsaot when it's brought in the Gemara in Zvachim, then bring it down as a braita, and rather than simply meitiv rava, the rabbi is asking a question based on his own drasha over here. So there it's more in Zvachim, it's indicated that it is a braita. That's number one. Number two is that even though we have a principle that Rav Tano Upalighu, the Rav sometimes has a status as a Tano, and therefore he's allowed to argue on other Tanaim. First of all, the Gemara does not invoke that principle all the time. It invokes it in certain instances. So it's not a foolproof statement that just because Rav said it, he's allowed to argue on a braita. But the Gemara does bring it up in a number of cases. There are other instances where the Gemara is not willing to do that and says Rav is kafui to the Tanaim, to the braita. So it might have to do with the type of braita or item that is quoted as to how strong that position is. Happens to be over here that there are those that claim that this comes from Torat Kohanim. And Torat Kohanim, which is the Midrash Halacha, is a very strong type of braita, and therefore Rav can't argue on it. Or, because the Gemara says that the braita of Torat Kohanim came from Tana de Bei Rav. It came out of the Beit Midrash of Rav. And therefore Rav is arguing on a braita that comes from Tana de Bei Rav. That is from the Beit Midrash of Rav. And so then it wouldn't make sense, and that's why Rava questions him. Which is that the pasuk by Kashrut in Parshat Re'eh says, "V'chol be'ema mafreset parasav shosad shesa shtei parasot malat gira be'ema ota tochelu." It says there that you may eat from animals that have a split hoof and chew their cud. Ota tochelu, that you're allowed to eat. Ve'en be'ema acheret tochelu, and you may not eat other animals. So, Rav, if we take your position here, that anytime there's a positive commandment in the Torah telling you to do something, that any derivative negative commandment is considered to be a lav, then over there by Kashrut, where it says you may eat animals that have split hooves and chew their cud, implied from that is that if they don't have that, you may not eat the animals. So then there would be a lota said that derives directly from that positive statement. Vigida amart, if you want to say enochanami, etzet lo tochlu. It then goes on to say, this you may not eat. So why does the Torah have to go out of its way to tell you specifically that you may not eat these items if that's already a derivative from the previous pasuk? If there's no lav that derives from the previous pasuk, then I understand why the Torah comes and gives a lav. Sometimes it wants to put an assay and a lav on the same restriction. But if you're telling me that that previous assay is both an assay and a lav all wrapped together, then why does the Torah come out of its way right away to give you another lav right after that? Zelo tochelu lomali. Ela itmar hachi itmar. If you're going to say this over, this is what you need to say. Amar of Gidol Merav, zar shachal mechatav vasham lifnei zrika patur. That a individual who is not a kohen, that eats from a chatav vasham before zrikat adam. So we train the fact that it was a kohen to a zar now. He's patur. My time up. Damar kra vachlu otam asher kupar behem. So what the Gemara is suggesting is similar to what we answered on the previous Amud, which is that there is two sides to this coin. Only when the Kohanim are permitted to eat this item are the Zarim restricted from eating it. And over here where you have a Chatat Vasham before Zrikat Adam, in that instance the Kohen is not allowed to eat it before Zrika as well. So the Kohen can't eat it, then the other half of the pasuk doesn't get triggered, which is zar lo yochal, that the zar may not participate in ikti kodeshim. That is because the kohen can't eat it. If the kohen could eat it, then there would be an iser zar. So over here, where it's prior to zrikat adam and the kohen can't eat it, then v'choichad lo kriyin abe v'chlu otam asher kupar behem, where the kohen can't eat it, lo kriyin abe zar lo yochal ki kodeshim. Then there's no restriction or no lav over here. And that's the chiddush in Rav's statement. And that's why he changed it from a kohen to a zar, and changed it from chayav or loke to patur, to teach you this din. Amar Rav Elazar, Amar Rav Hoshaya. Bikurim, when it comes to bikurim, which is the first item enumerated in our Mishnah, hanacha me'akevet behem, placing them down next to the mizbeach is me'akev. If you don't do that, then the kohenim can't eat the bikurim. Kriya ein me'akevet behem. Then the reading of the parshia of Mikra Bikurim for Parshat Ki Tavo, that is not me'akev. I says, mi amar Rabbi Lazar hachi? Did Rabbi Lazar ever say such a thing? V'amar Rabbi Lazar, amar Rabbi Shaya, he frish bikurim kodem lechag. If you take off bikurim before Chag HaSukkot, v'avar le'am lechag, and then Chag HaSukkot passed by, yirkevu, they should be let to rot. My lav, what is the reason you let them rot? Yishem delo matzi in the Mikra lehem, because you can't read Mikra Bikurim. The Mishnah on Bikurim tells us that the time period for Bikurim starts at the holiday of Shavuot. That's why Shavuot is known as Chag HaBikurim. So the Bikurim, or the mitzvah Bikurim, starts on Chag HaShavuot and ends technically at Chag HaSukkot. It's what is otherwise known as Zman HaSimcha. It's the time when the items are being harvested and the Asifa, and they're being brought in. They're let to dry in the field and then brought into the houses. That's a time of Simcha. It's a time of celebration. It's a time where the produce has now come to fruition, and all the hard work and all the waiting and all the rain and everything that went into the producing of these items, now we're finally taking them in and reaping the benefits of that which we sowed. So in that time period, it's known as Zman HaSimcha, and that's why, especially Sukkot, is Zman Simchatenu. So during that period of time, the Mikra Bikurim says there, V'samachta b'chol otov, asher natan lecha Hashem Elokecha, v'etecha ata v'alivi v'agir asher bikir becha. So that Simcha means that only at the time of Simcha do you do Mikra Bikurim. So Mikra Bikurim only applies between Shavuot and Sukkot. On the other hand, if you bring Bikurim after Sukkot, you can't say the Parsha of Mikra Bikurim because it's past the time of Simcha. But the Mishnah does say, it's one of the few times in the Mishnah that Chanukah is mentioned. Over there it says that from Sukkot until Chanukah, if you bring Bikurim, then those Bikurim are brought up, but there is no Kriya, there is no Mikra Bikurim associated with them. And so what is being said over here is that this individual that picked them and they were ready before Sukkot, but does not bring them up to the Beit HaMikdash till after Sukkot, according to Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shaya, you let him rot. The mitzvah can't be fulfilled. And the Gemara is saying, you know why that is? Because before Sukkot, when you picked them or they became Chayav in Bikurim, that period of time was a time when you could have read Mikra Bikurim. After Sukkot, when you bring them up, you can't read Mikra Bikurim, and that's what causes them to be problematic and why they have to rot. What you see from that is that Kriya, the reading of Mikra Bikurim, is Me'akev, because here you let them rot because you couldn't do Mikra Bikurim. V'isal kadatcha Kriya ina Me'akevet bem. If you think that Kriya is not Me'akev, amai yirkevu? Why should they be let to rot? My answer is Kid de Rabbi Zeira. It's like Rabbi Zeira, the principle of Rabbi Zeira that we know from the Gemara in Menachot. Dama Rabbi Zeira, kol haro'oy lebila, anything that can be mixed, ein bila me'akevet bo. Then mixing is not me'akev, does not stop you from accomplishing this mitzvah. Choshe ein haro'oy lebila, anything that cannot be mixed, bila me'akevet bo. Then mixing is a problem. This goes to a mincha. The mincha is a requirement that you are bolel, that you mix it up, which is the water, the shemen, the oil, and the flour are mixed together. There's a requirement that you are bolel. But the Mishnah tells us that if you didn't mix it, it's not ma'akev. L'chatchila, you should mix it. But if you don't mix it, it's not ma'akev, and the mincha is k'shera. But the Mishnah tells us that if you have a mincha that is greater than 60 isaron, you're not allowed to bring it in a single kli. Which is, if a person promises to bring a mincha of 61 esronim, then he has to split it into two. He brings one of 60 and then one of one. And the Gemara says, why can't you bring more than 60? It's because kimle the chachamim knew that once you pass the threshold of 60 isaron, you can't mix the flour, the water, and the oil properly. Up to 60 isaron, it mixes nicely. After that, it doesn't mix nicely. And the Gemara asks, why does it matter? If you tell me that blila, the requirement to be bolel, the item, is not ma'akev, then why does it matter that if you're greater than 60 isaron, that you can't mix it? You should be able to do it even if you didn't mix it. And this is where Rabbi Zera's principle comes in, where he says, if you can mix it, meaning that it's 60 or less isaron, then ein beila me'akevet bo. Then mixing it doesn't stop you from being able to bring the mincha. The other hand, kol she'eino yachol liblo, anything that you cannot do bila with, bila me'akevet, then bila is a problem. So what Rabbi Zeira basically says is that you need the potential to be able to mix it in order for it not be me'akev, in order that it's only lechatchila and not bidiabad. On the other hand, if you can't mix it at all, that is me'akev. That stops you from having the capacity to bring that korban. And what they're saying is the same thing over here. Eino chanami, if you brought the bikurim during the period of time between Shavuot and Sukkot, when you were supposed to bring them, because that's when they became chayav in bikurim, had you brought them during that period of time, eino chanami, if you brought them up to the mikdash and never said mikra bikurim, it would not be ma'akev. The problem here is that post-Sukkot, you can't say Mikra Bikurim. Since you can't say Mikra Bikurim, it is now Me'akev. It now stops you from being able to bring the Bikurim. These are Bikurim that need Mikra Bikurim. So if you did it in a period where you're allowed to do Mikra Bikurim and you just didn't do it, fine. But if you do it in a period where you're prohibited from doing Mikra Bikurim, that is Me'akev and that stops you from bringing them up. That's the answer to the stira in Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shaya, which is normally Kriya is not Me'akev. Kriya is only the Chatchila, not Bidiabad. And if you brought it and it didn't do Mikra Bikurim, the Kohanim can eat it, and it's not Me'akev. Now then, if you have the need to do Mikra Bikurim, and you cannot do it because it's prohibited post-Sukkot, then where you're not allowed to do Mikra Bikurim, that will be Me'akev, and that will stop you from the possibility of bringing the Bikurim. The Ramban does bring one exception to that rule over here, where he says that if you're mafrish the Bikurim originally with the intent to bring them up to Yerushalayim post Sukkot, then over there the Kriya would not be Me'akevet, because you intended to bring them up in a period of time where you couldn't have done the Kriya, And that means that you were mafrish bikurim with intent to not ever have to do kriya with them. The problem only arises when you separate them out where you could have done the kriya, which is you separate them at a time when it should have been chayav and kriya, and then you bring them up at a time that is not of kriya. But if you originally, even though you separate them at a time of kriya, but intended to bring them at a time that's not kriya, that means these bikurim from the outset were not chayavot in kriya, and therefore kriya would not be ma'akev in these bikurim. So then, the Gemara now says, on the other hand, Acha bar Yaakov matni lo kid Rav Asi amar Rav Yochanan. It would avoid the problem that we just had now, which is that Rav Acha bar Yaakov says that statement we brought before, that bikurim hanacha me'akevet behem, that hanacha is me'akev, and kriya ain't me'akevet, the attribution is not the Rav Elazar amar Rav Hoshaya, but rather the attribution is the Rabbi Asi amar Rabbi Yochanan. So that was a statement of Rabbi Asi amar Rabbi Yochanan, and it's possibility that the mix-up happened because remember, Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar are very close. Rabbi Elazar is a Talmud Chover of Rabbi Yochanan, so it's easy to see how there might be a mix-up in the Mesorah as to who said it. But then you run into a problem, the Rabbi Yochanan had the Rabbi Yochanan. That this statement of Rabbi Yochanan is in contradiction with another statement of Rabbi Yochanan. Umi amar Rabbi Yochanan bikurim hanacha me'akevet behem. Kriya ena me'akevet behem. Can you really say what is said by that statement before, that hanacha, placing them down, is me'akev, whereas kriya ena me'akev? Ba'boi minei Rav Asi mi Rabbi Yochanan. Didn't Rabbi Asi ask of Rabbi Yochanan, bikurim me'ematai mutarim lekohanim? When do bikurim become okay for the kohanim? Ba'amalei haru'im lekriya mishikara lehem. Those bikurim that need to have mikra bikurim, after you've read mikra bikurim, v'she'ein ru'im lekriya. And those that do not require mikra bikurim, mishra'u pnei abayit, as soon as they see the Beit HaMikdash. The Gemara says, kasha kriya akriya. You have a problem with regards to mikra bikurim. You have the statement before where he says kriya is eina me'akevet. It's not me'akev, it's lechatchila, but not bidiavad, and you could eat them without mikra bikurim. Yet in this statement here, where Rabbi Yochanan is answering Rabbi Asi, he says that if it needs kriya, then you can only eat the bikurim after kriya or after mikra bikurim. So that's a stira in Rabbi Yochanan. In addition to that, hanacha is also a problem. Kasha hanacha hanacha. The hanacha, before we said, is me'akev. In this answer that Rabbi Yochanan gives to Rabbi Asi, he says that all you need to do is ro'eh p'nei abayit. You just needed to see the mikdash. It sees the mikdash, means it's brought into the azarah, you're done. You don't have to actually put it down, place it by the corner of the mizbeach. It's enough that it just got into the azarah, and that's it. So there again, you have a stira on the position of Rabbi Yochanan. Remember it says, kriya, kriya lo kasha. The kriya is not a question. Ha Rabbi Shimon, ha Rabbonon. Rabbi Yochanan in each case was proffering the position of a different Tana. In one case he was speaking in the position of Rabbi Shimon, who we said before is the author of our Mishnah, along with his Rebbe, Rabbi Akiva, which is our Mishnah says that if you eat Bikurim before Kriyat Bikurim, you get Malkot, which tells you that Kriya is Me'akevet. So in the statement that said Kriya is Me'akevet, which is that second statement of Rabbi Yochanan, there he was following the position of Rabbi Shimon. The first statement that we before said was attributed to Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Hoshaya, and we said, no, it's really Rabbi Asi in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. There where it says Kriya is Eina Me'akevet, that's the sheet of the Rabbonin that argue on Rabbi Shimon in our Mishnah and say that Kriya is not Me'akev. Hanacha, hanacha, nami lo kasha. Placement is also not a question. Ha Rabbi Yehuda, v'ha Rabbonin. That's machok between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbonin. Umay Rabbi Yehuda. Who is this Rabbi Yehuda that you're saying is about this machloket? The Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says about Mikra Bikurim, Minachto Zo Tnufa. In Mikra Bikurim, and we're going to now follow the position of Rashi here, the word Hanacha appears twice. First, Lakacha Kuena Tenem Yadecha, V'ini Cho Lifnei Mizbach Hashem Elokecha. Later on in the Parsha it says, so we noted before, Rashi brought this on the Mishnah, the reason that Hanacha is Me'akevet is because the word Hanacha appears twice in the Parshia of Bikurim. And we have a principle, again we'll see this when we get to Zvachim, that anytime it comes to Kodoshim, an item that is repeated twice is Me'akev. It causes an ikub, means that you have to do this, even bidiavad. So the fact that the parsha of Mikra Bikurim repeats Hanacha twice, tells you that it is me'akev. That's the position of what we saw in the Chachamim's position before, that Kriya is not me'akev, but Hanacha is me'akev. Now Tosafot raises a serious issue over here, which is, we're saying over here that the reason that Hanacha is me'akevet is because it's repeated twice in the Parshiat Bikurim. Yet Rabbi Shimon on the Mishnah tells us that Kriyat Bikurim is Me'akev. And Kriyat Bikurim is not mentioned twice in the Parshiyah. There's only one mention, which is the requirement, Vanita Vamarta Lifnei Hashem Elokecha, that you say over this Parshiyah before Hashem, and then it begins, Armi Ovid Ovid, that's Mikra Bikurim. So it's only mentioned once in the Parshiyah. So why is it that it's Me'akev? So one approach to deal with that, which is the approach of the Bali HaTosafot, who suggests that the source for Rabbi Shimon is not in Mikra Bikurim, but rather from the Pasuk of Lo Tuchal Lechol B'Sharecha, which is what we saw in yesterday's daf. That was the source for his Malkot by eating the Bikurim Lifnei Akriya. It's a special limo that comes out of that Pasuk, not associated with the instructions that are found in Mikra Bikurim. So that's the way the Bali HaTosafot deal with it. The Ritva, on the other hand, suggests that there is a Kfelut HaLashon in the Parshia, which is Vanita Vamarta, that you use two verbs to describe your necessity to make a proclamation or declaration when you bring out the Bikurim, which is Vanita Vamarta. Therefore, he says there is a duplication of Lashon, which creates the Ikuv over here. So now, the Gemara brings down a bright, the Yudomer, Inachto Zotnufa. Don't learn from the word Hanacha, literally means to put down. Rather, anacha means nufa, a wave offering. That the bikurim that are brought up, not only have to be brought to the mizbeach and placed down by the corner of the mizbeach, you also have to do a wave offering with them. How do you know that? From the word vihinachto. So now, Rashi claims over here, it's very interesting, Rashi, he says the reason that vihinachto means nufa is because of the translation of the word. The word hanacha can have two different shorashim. It can have a shorash of, to be nach, or noach, to rest, or to be at ease, but also the shorash of the word hanacha could be from the word neche, to lead, or direct someone. And that's what Rashi says over here, that the word hinachto, he's translating as meaning to lead, or to set off in a direction. And he says that that's what tnufa is. A wave offering is pushing the bikurim in all different directions. That, he says, derives from the word hinachto, and his translation of the word hinachto. Ata omer zo tnufa, o ena hanacha mamash. How do you know that the word hanacha in the pasuk of hinachto is referencing to a wave offering and not just placing it down? Kishu omer, earlier in the parshia when it says vihinicho, hari hanacha amur. You already have the word hanacha there, and so you already have the requirement of placing it down. Hamani mikayim vihinachto. What do I do with the word hinachto? Zo tnufa. That is a wave offering. In that case, and this is what Rashi explains over here, then you only have one word of hanacha, one instruction of placing it down, not the second word of hanacha. And since you only have one, it's not me'akev. And that is the shita of Rabbi Yehuda, that hanacha ena me'akevet. And so now the case where Rabbi Yochanan said, all you need is riyat pnei abayit. In order to eat the bikurim, you don't need hanacha. Hanacha is not me'akevet. That's according to this shita of Rabbi Yehuda, who says the word hanacha, or the second time the word hanacha is used, is not about placing it down, which would have made it a requirement that is me'akevet. Rather, it's about a tnufa, which is a totally different din. And since you have only one of each of these items, then none of them are ma'akev. Not the hanacha nor the tnufa will be ma'akevet here, because they're only both mentioned once in the parshia Bikurim. And that's the Rabbi Yehuda. And obviously the Rabbanon that disagree with them say that hanacha, you have it twice, the place down, is ma'akev. Where it says, umantana de poligalei Rabbi Yehuda. Who are the Rabbanon? Who is that alternate opinion that argues on Rabbi Yehuda? Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov, that is Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov, the Tanya. Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov, we bring from a Braita. Lakacha kohen atena miyadecha. The kohen takes the basket from your hands, the basket of the bikurim. The made of the bikurim, shetunim tnufa, divi Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov. From this you learn that bikurim require a wave offering. So first of all, it's clear from here, and this is what Rashi says, is that the second hanacha, he does not use for tnufa. That means that the word hanacha appears twice, and it's used both times to mean hanacha to place it down. And it is ma'akev. So Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov argues on Rabbi Yehuda and says that hanacha is ma'akevet because the requirement for hanacha appears twice in the parshiyah Bikurim. And that means that it is ma'akevet. Now, he learns out tnufa from the lakachta kohen atena miyadecha. How does he learn that? My time with the Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. What's the limud that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is learning that all of a sudden he quotes the pasuk and says, oh yeah, here's tnufa. Atya yad yad mishlamim. It's a gzera shava from shlamim. Tivacha, it says over here, v'lakacha kohen atena miyadecha, the word yadecha, uktiv, hotam, and it's written over there by the shlamim, yadav tibi'ena et ishe Hashem, that his hands will bring the ishe Hashem, makan kohen, just like over here, it's speaking about a kohen, aflalan kohen, so too by shlamim, it's referencing to the kohen, malalan balim, over there, when it's speaking about the shlamim, it's speaking about the owners of the Shlamim, the Baalim of the Shlamim, Yadav Tiviena. So there the Yadayim are the Yadayim of the Baalim. Afkan Baalim. So over here it's a reference to the Baalim, which means that this Gezer Shabbat tells you you need the hands of the Kohen and the hands of the Baalim. Ha Ketzat. How do you accomplish that? Meniach Kohen Yadav Tachat Yaday Baalim Umeinif. The Baalim hold the Bikurim in their hands in the basket. Then the Kohenim put their hands underneath the hands of the Israel. And then Meinif, they do the Tnufa. They do the wave offering. So that's the limo that he has of Yad Yad. It happens to be that some of the Rishonim, like the Rambam, believe that that's not the way that you do it. From our Gemara, the Pashtut of our Gemara, it sounds like the Kohen places his hands under the hands of the Baalim. The other hand, the Rambam and others say that you can't do that because it's a chatzitza. Then there's a chatzitza between the Bikurim and the hands of the Kohen, which are the hands of the Baalim, are in between. Even though that's the Pashtut of a Gemara, but they rather say that the Baalim put their hands towards the side of the basket, and the Kohen puts his hands underneath the basket, meaning that they're both holding the basket, but just in different locations. The Baalim's hands are above, and the Kohenim's hands are below. Not below the hands of the Baalim, but rather lower down on the basket than the hands of the Baalim. And in doing so, then, you have it that both of them have their hands on the Bikurim, and you do a wave offering. That will be the answer to Rabbi Stira and Rabbi Yochanan. In one place, he says, Hanacha is Ma'akevet. That is according to the Shita of Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov, who has Hanacha repeated twice, because he learns Tnufa from Lakacha Kohen Atenevi Yadecha, the Gzer Shavo Yadecha, to the Yadav of Bishlamim. And the other case where Rabbi Yochanan says that Hanacha is not Ma'akevet, all you have to do is Riyat Pnei Abayit, means bring it into the Azara. That'll be according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says that one of the terms Hanacha are used to teach you about a Tnufa, about the wave offering, and therefore you only have the word Hanacha mentioned once, which means that it's Lechatchila, but not Ma'akev. And that same Rabbi Yochanan will be according to that position of Rabbi Yehuda. Tosfot over here asks from Rashi on Chumash, where Rashi on Chumash actually translates the words V'hinicho and V'hinachto to be speaking about Tnufa, and actually to tell you that there are two different wave offerings, or two different Tnufot, that are associated with Mikra Bikurim. So Vayit Tosafot say, Rashi and Chumash, according to which Tana is he explaining it? He's not according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says that you learn out Tnufa from Hinachto, but the first Hanacha has to do with real Hanacha. He's not learning like Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov, who says both Hanachot are about placing it down, and nothing to do with the wave offering. And here, Rashi and Chumash is saying that both of the words are a reference to Tnufa. And therefore, the Tosfot comes to a different conclusion than Rashi does over here about this machloke between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov. He says, Lekach Perush HaRabbi Rabbi Avram Bar Yitzchak, Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov Sfir Lehochi, the Trei Krai, Mayri B'Tnufa. Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov thinks that both psukim deal with Tnufa. Ushtei Tnufot Hayu, Velo Marek Klau B'Anacha. And has nothing to do with Anacha. Both times the word Hanacha here means Tnufa. Hanacha lo Me'akevet. According to him, Hanacha is not Me'akevet at all. V'hadamar. So then, why does the Gemara ask about Rabbi Yehuda? Who is the Baal Plukta of Rabbi Yehuda that says that Hanacha is Me'akevet? Now you're explaining to me that Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov thinks that both words of Hanacha deal with Tnufa. Then, why did the Gemara bring Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov at all? V'hadamar man tepoligalei Rabbi Yehuda achi kamar. The mafiklei Tnufa mikra achrina. That he learns out the word Tnufa from somewhere else, which is from Lakacha Kohen Atenem Yadecha. And then he will, after he learns that Gzer Shava, he says the word Hanacha in both instances means a Tnufa. So that is the Gemara's question, which is simply, who argues on the sourcing of Tnufa from the word Vinachto? The answer is Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov. But Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov agrees that the word Hanacha means Tnufa. Once we have that Gzer Shava, that it means Tnufa, and that's the source for Rashi's position in Chumash, Rashi's position in Chumash, which is that both words are Tnufa. But then we don't have anybody who argues and says that Hanacha is Me'akevet. What he says here is, Rabbona Ditle Hanacha Me'akevet, Hanu Tana Kamat Bar Plukte Rabbi Yehuda in the second Bikurim in Perek Gimel, Mishnah Vav. So the Mishnah that we quoted here, the Sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, the Tana Kamat, that Mishnah is the Rabbonon, and that is the Baal Plukte of Rabbi Yehuda who holds Hanacha Me'akevet. So you actually have three Tanaim over here. You have the Rabbonon who say Hanacha is Me'akevet. You have Rabbi Yehuda who says that one word refers to Tnufa, one word to Hanacha, and therefore they're both not Me'akev. And then you have Rabbi Elizabeth ben Yaakov who says that the Tnufa is not learned from Hinachto, but rather from the Gzer Shava, but both words of Hinachto are associated with Tnufa, and not the placing down of the Bikurim. And therefore, according to both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov, Hanacha is not Me'akev. Only according to the Chachamim is Hanacha Me'akevet. Although then, the Baalei HaTosafot asks on Rabbi Yehuda's position, How is it that he knows that, first of all, you need a kohen involved in a tnufa? And how does he know that there's a requirement for two tnufot by bikurim? Because he points out that Rabbi Yehuda learns it out of the word bihinachto, which is the latter of the two mentions of hanachto, which is not near the kohen, and is also after the amira. If you had picked the word bihinicho, which is the one before the kriya, as well as the one associated with the kohen, then he could have learned both of those dinim out. But the fact is that he doesn't learn it from that pasuk. If you now note, the gra in the Gemara changes the girsa. And he changes the girsa in Rabbi Yehuda's position to say that it's not v'hi nachto teaches you zot nufa, but rather v'hi nicho teaches you zot nufa. And that would solve all the problems or the questions of the Baal Yad Tosafot, because then the limud of Rabbi Yehuda would be for the hanacha before the kriya, as well as associated with the kohen. And for that reason, the gra likely changed the girsa from hinachto to hinicho, and that would avoid the problem. But it's clear that the Baal Yad Tosafot had the girsa that we have in our Gemara, which is hinachto zo tenufa. On the other hand, the Ritva solves the problem by saying that Rabbi Yehuda actually subscribes to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov's position. The opposite of what the Tosafot say, that Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov is mekabel Rabbi Yehuda's position. He says the other way around, that Rabbi Yehuda is mekabel the position of Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. And therefore he has two tenufot. He has a tenufa that is learned from the gzeir shovel of Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, and is an additional tenufa that is learned from the word v'inachto. And it's actually Rabbi Yehuda who Rashi is quoting in Chomesh, who has tenufa two times. One tenufa that is associated with the adecha that has the kohen and is lifnei the kriya, and the other one which is the inachto, which is after the kriya. And in that way, the girsa in our Gemara of inachto is the proper girsa, because that's the tenufa afterwards. The tenufa before the amira would come from the gzera shava of yadecha. And so in that way, the Ritva, first of all, explains to us where did Rashi get that position in Chumash, as well as solving the problem here as to why we use the girsa of hinachto and not hinicho, which is the question of the Baal Yad Tosafot. But then it would be harder to explain why the Gemara says, man da pantana de poliga Rabbi Yehuda, who's the Tana that argues on Rabbi Yehuda, when Rabbi Yehuda accepts this position of Rabbi Ezra ben Yaakov. What you have to say is that Rabbi Ezra ben Yaakov doesn't accept the position of Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore he only learns it out of Gzeira Shava and not from the word hanacha. And then the Gemara would continue to read like Rashi, which is you have the word hanacha twice then, and it is me'akev. And then you could use Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov arguing on Rabbi Yehuda to be the source for that position, rather than the Tanakama that the Baal Yad Tosafot claimed is what the Gemara is speaking about, and would flow easier in the Lashona Gemara based on the way the Ritva learns over here. Okay, we're going to stop here on the bottom line of Yud Chet Amud Bet.